Cape Talk, Pippa's Planet.
Something a little different today as we focus on some of our planet's furrier species and talk pet nutrition. You know, we spend a lot of time worrying and talking about what we put into our own bodies. I wonder if you're doing the same for your pets. With me in studio is an animal nutritionist who has spent over 40 years in this field. He's worked all over the world as a consultant to governments, to pet food companies, to farms and zoos. He's formulated diets for everything from aardvarks to zebras. He's published a book on pet nutrition, and he's an adjunct professor at Penn State University in the USA. I'm looking forward to chatting to him and taking your questions about feeding your pets an optimal diet. And we have a little incentive for you to call in today, which I'll explain in just a moment. If you're going to phone, the number to dial is 021-446-0567. You're also most welcome to leave your question as a voice note on 072-567-1567. Dr. Richard Patton, welcome to South Africa and welcome to Cape Talk.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Great to have you with us. Just to be clear for our listeners, that doctor is by way of a PhD in animal nutrition, not a veterinary degree. That's correct?
PhD.
Okay. What has brought you to South Africa?
I'm here to help my clients and friends.
Okay, clients and friends. And part of that helping process is a talk that you're giving tomorrow, Saturday the 28th of October, at the Belmont Square Conference Center. Dog O'Bone presents The Science and Dogma of Pet Nutrition. What are you going to be chatting about?
I tend to try and lecture about the principles of nutrition for all mammals.
For all mammals in general. So anybody who is a pet owner of a mammal will benefit from coming?
And as well as anybody who is a mammal.
Well, that's all of us last time I checked. So when I said I had an added incentive, we had two double tickets to give away to this talk today. And those will be going to the two most interesting callers who phone in during the segment. So please get dialing with your questions and you could win those tickets. I mean, I'm sure the science of animal nutrition must vary hugely from species to species. But in general, when we look at what we feed an animal, is it a case of trying to find a diet that is as close as possible to what they would have eaten if they were running wild?
That's an insightful question, yeah. We do find benefit when we match the diet to their genetic machinery.
Okay. Now, what does that mean for us in a household setting? Let's start, for example, with a dog owner. What should we be looking for?
In simple terms, everyone, I think, can relate to this. You don't give a dog hay, and you don't give a cow dog food. So we want to try and understand what was in the primordial world as evolution was crafting this species and what today best fits that enzymatic machinery that they have.
Okay. Now, here in South Africa, dry dog pellets are pretty big. It's a big industry. It's what I think many pet owners are feeding their dogs. And we know that those often get bulked up with the addition of cereals and grains of different kinds. Is that a diet that's actually good for dogs in general?
You're right. The vast majority of pet food throughout the world is this dry expanded kibble. And it capitalizes on an advantage or a property of starch. When starch is heated with moisture, it expands. And when it's dried and cooled, it stays expanded. Mm-hmm. So this is how we get the crunchy kibble. But there's a big drawback in that this provides an excess amount of soluble carbohydrate. And nature made carbohydrate very hard to find. In the wilderness, in the primordial world, if we turned you loose to survive out on the Kalahari, you'd find many things that would suffice as food. None of them contain any carbohydrate. And so when we're giving our pet dog this kibble every day, we're actually inducing an endocrine abuse. And it's far better to feed a diet that is devoid of carbohydrate, or at least 10% or lower.
Okay. It's interesting because, of course, here in South Africa, we're still very much caught up in the Banting diet for humans, which is a low-carbohydrate diet. Interesting to hear you say that the same would apply to dogs. What would you recommend feeding to dogs if it was cost wasn't a factor, if all ingredients were available? What's the absolute optimal diet that you'd recommend?
I would recommend the diet that matches their enzymatic machinery, the primordial diet, the one that is low in soluble carbohydrate.
Okay, and how would one go about creating that for a pet?
If you were to go into your kitchen and try and assemble the appropriate diet, you would want to avoid the carbohydrates, the rice, the potatoes, the starch, and the sugar, of course.
Mm-hmm. What would you want to put in then?
You want vegetables, because vegetables are low in the soluble carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And, of course, meats. The meats can be chicken, fish, beef. One ingredient I particularly like is chicken necks and backs. Mm-hmm. Many people are concerned about feeding chicken, but that's because the long bones that are hollow, because birds fly, they need the weight advantage of a hollow bone. These bones can shatter and be a problem on digestion. They act like knives and sabers. Mm. But the necks and backs are vertebrae. They crunch up nicely. And so in a chicken neck or back, we've got a really nice array of nutrients. We have the protein and the fat and all the minerals, but none of the carbohydrate.
Okay. So advocating for what sounds, I'm assuming, is raw processing of these vegetables, the meat, etc., rather than purchased dog food with all the additives that you'd rather do without and the carbs. How easy is it, and how accessible is that for people to actually make that food for their own pets?
I always encourage people to do this in their kitchen. It takes 2-3 weeks before they're then going to a manufacturer and saying, I'm tired of this. What do you have that will spare me this this inconvenience? And so it's a very rapidly growing segment of the pet food industry is this raw and kind of natural ingredient.
Okay, so it is possible, what you're saying, to purchase food that's been prepared like this for you?
Oh, absolutely, okay. Yeah. There's I guess here in town there's a dozen or so options. Of course, I would want to recommend my client.
Please do. They've brought you here. I don't mind you giving them a bit of a shout-out.
No, I'll leave this to you.
Okay, well, it's Doggo Bone who have brought Dr. Patton to South Africa and are hosting the talk tomorrow. So I think it is worth mentioning them as one of your options if you'd like to explore a raw food diet for your pets. Our questions are starting to flow through on the lines, 021-446-0567. You can also send an SMS to 31567. We're going to start with Michelle, who's been waiting patiently on the line from Claremont with a question. Michelle, good afternoon.
Thank you so much, Pippa, for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, we would like advice. Our cat has had a bacterial infection in her ears for a long time, many months, and eventually the vet said we must stop all protein food and only give the kibbles. And we did that for 40 days. The cat was very unhappy because it's been brought up on wet food. And after 40 days, the bacterial infection did disappear. So we thought, well, maybe we can start again just in minute quantities, and the infection has come back again. So this must mean that we can't give the cat any protein food at all. So I've heard the vet talking about a non-carbohydrate food, and I don't know what I could give our cat.
Any suggestions for Michelle?
Michelle brings up 3 or 4 major points. Mm-hmm. Let's take these one at a time. First of all, her experience would be the reverse of what we typically see when you leave a kibble due to the fact that you're groping for a solution to an ear infection. What we find is when you avoid the soluble carbohydrates, the infection gets better. So her experience is the reverse. The reason that soluble carbohydrate can create these problems is because they set up the wrong gut microflora. And the gut microflora educates our immune system. 40% of the immune capability in a mammal is in the gut. And so the gut microflora become a really important partner in getting things right. So some of the additional points.
Michelle, just as a recap, so you've addressed the soluble carbs there. Your question was about reintroducing the protein that you'd left out. Is that correct?
Yes. When we did introduce it, the bacterial infection returned.
Does that mean simply that Michelle should leave that out of the diet entirely?
It's hard to imagine that protein is the culprit here. Also, we can't know the purity of the particular diet that she was going to, meaning what sort of a bacterial load did it deliver. And the other problem, I often find myself in this situation. I'm not a veterinarian. That's medicine. I am a nutritionist. The biomedical profession is crisis-oriented. It fixed broken dogs. I prevent them from breaking in the first place. Mm. And so whenever there is a pet carrying a confirmed diagnosis, I say, go back to the clinician that gave this to you. I do not want to be involved.
I think that's a fair point. Michelle, thank you so much for your call, and I hope the cat is doing well. Simon has given us a call from Wellington, specifically wanting to talk about a hunting dog, I believe. Simon, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Yes, well, thanks, and you?
Good, good. I've hit up a good couple of brick walls. I've got a Mexican hairless hunting dog. A lot of people haven't ever seen one or know what I'm talking about.
Mm.
I've been struggling to find info on a diet for him because he needs high oils, otherwise his skin dries out and he turns into a very rough leather couch.
Shame.
But also, I'm not the food that you buy in a shop is not geared for his digestion, as far as I'm concerned. He's not a rustle or a poodle or something like that. He's built like a whippet, but got a mouth like a hyena and no hair.
Unique challenges. What's your advice to Simon?
Well, Simon says the food that he's using, he needs to identify which of his 200 options he's talking about. But
I'm on a Hills, because I've got three Jack Russells, so I'm mm-hmm. on a Hills Jack Russell. He's eating with them, so it's food made for Jack Russell.
No, I didn't mean to badger you into identifying the source of the product. I'm not for or against any particular brand necessarily. I'm against excess soluble carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the Mexican hairless, the concern is the diet, and the fat content of the diet, which you've alluded to. And if you go to a raw diet that tends to be animal source protein, you're going to automatically have adequate fat.
Okay. Simple solution. There we go. Simon, thank you for your call. Amanda in Milnerton, I'm so glad you phoned in because one of the questions we haven't yet addressed is the immediate response that if you're cutting out the kibble, etc., and the grains, you're cutting out the fiber and the roughage in the diet. I think that's what you want to ask about, Amanda. Good afternoon.
Hi, yes. Well, I've got two Dachshunds and they're currently eating Hills, the Hills mix for environmental allergies. And for years now, both my Dachshunds have really been struggling with their anal glands to the point where I have to take them to the vet every 6 weeks to have them expressed. And the vet said, yeah, you know, the problem with these, especially the more premium kibbles, is that there isn't enough roughage in it. I mean, they're kind of marketed as, you know, there's less poo to pick up, etc. And she advised that I add soluble fiber of some sort to their diet, but she wasn't very clear on what I could add to their diets. So, any suggestions?
We tend to bring our Victorian ethics to the discussion about the poo. And of course, the pets suffer no such handicap. Every morning when I go out to feed the horses, the inside pack of dogs can't wait to go consume horse manure. I don't think there's quite the need for fiber in the diet that many people would advise. If you're feeding a proper diet, well, I'll put it this way. 90 to 95% of all loose stools is overfeeding.
Really?
So if all you need to do is tighten the stools, just feed less. I guarantee you will tighten stools. And the anal gland, I mean, here again, we're getting over towards what the veterinarians deal with, but there's a simple mechanics involved here, and I think if we tighten up the feces, we're going to get better expression of the anal glands.
Okay, Amanda, thanks for an interesting call. You said the magic words there. A lot of the problem is due to overfeeding. Portion control is one of the key parts of what you talk about. I know that when we're talking about our animals, it's what we're feeding them, it's how much exercise they're getting, it's also how much we're feeding them. Is it something that is routinely overdone?
You can think of this, let's take the part of the nutrition discussion that is obesity or weight loss. You can think of it as a three-legged stool. There is, of course, the exercise is one leg that you talk about. We all get this part. Even if you exercise and don't lose weight, you're going to be better off. There's the other leg, which is portion control. This, too, is straightforward. We all understand that. The less you eat, the better off you are in your odds of losing weight. But the third leg of this stool is the one that no one understands. It's diet composition. And we have literally a century of misinformation to thank for this. Fat is not the culprit. Carbohydrate is. And finally, the biomedical profession is coming to this point of view.
Thank you for that. Tyrone has been holding very patiently from Kensington with a question or comment. Tyrone, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Good afternoon, Doctor.
Good afternoon.
When you mentioned primordial, I thought you were going to go back to what men should be eating, and that is meat.
Well,
why would a dog need to eat carbohydrates and vegetables if the intrinsic type is meat?
Yeah, we've got a terrible phone line there. You might have misheard because the doctor said now several times that he's against an excess of soluble carbohydrates, but I think Tyrone's questioning the vegetables and the meat. I'm glad he brought this up because I know there is a sense, particularly for cats, I think, that people think a meat-only diet is what's needed, but that's not the case at all, is it?
A meat, strict meat, no bones, is woeful nutrition. It is very low in calcium and phosphorus, and the ratio is inverse. So you can't just feed meat. You have to feed a balanced diet, and that includes the proper level of calcium and phosphorus.
Okay, and vegetables as well, as you said earlier.
They can be there. There's no harm at all. I think there's a lot of good to them being there. Okay. But it's also possible to have a diet that is adequate without any vegetables.
Thank you for that. Tyrone, thanks for your call. I'm sorry we had a very crackly line, so I had to leave it there. Interesting comment on the WhatsApp line from someone who is a house sitter, saying, I'm a pet and house sitter, and I am shocked at what the majority of wealthy people feed their pets, both cats and dogs, mainly cereal and grain-based nutrition. Even the very expensive, well-known brands have low-quality protein, leftovers from the abattoirs, unfit for human consumption. I think the point this person's making is people who would probably spend a lot of money on what they're putting into their own mouths aren't thinking to be more mindful of what they're putting into their pets' mouths. And I'm glad that you sent that message, and perhaps it's made somebody stop and think about that. A question on our SMS line from someone who let me just try and put this together because it's come through in pieces. All right, why is there an epidemic of diabetes in domestic cats? Is it linked to the obesity question?
Diabetes and obesity are related, as we know. But part of the problem is the cat is what we call an obligate carnivore. It must be a carnivore. And nature never intended for the cat to get very much carbohydrate. So a lifetime of a dry cat kibble is going to have a tendency to bring on diabetes.
Okay. And then Mandy SMSing, heard you referencing the chicken neck that you mentioned. She said, we give this to our dogs, but I cook mine until they're really soft in a stock. Is that all right?
There's no harm, but neither is it necessary.
Okay. We have to wrap it up there. I'm so sorry we haven't got through even half of the questions that have come through, but I hope that those of you who didn't get an answer from this show will go along to the doctor's talk tomorrow. It's Saturday the 28th of October at 3 p.m. until 5 p.m. at the Belmont Square Conference Center in Belmont Road, Rondebosch. Dr. Richard Patton, thank you so much for being with us today.
A pleasure. Thank you.